Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to From Where We Are from Annenberg Radio News. For November 12, 2015, I'm Carla Javier. But first, a news update with Sebastian Vega.
Two people are dead after a family dispute in South Los Angeles. The shots were fired late this morning in the 1100 block of West 55th Street. LAPD says a fight broke out among family members and someone pulled out a gun, killing one person and wounding another. The shooter was reportedly shot by another family member and died at the scene. Police say the third victim's wounds are not life-threatening. Los Angeles activists rallied outside Mayor Eric Garcetti's office this morning to spread awareness about fracking and fossil fuel usage in LA County. The rally included members from the Food and Water Watch, California Nurses Association, and the Sierra Club. Pilar Schiavo is a volunteer from the California Nurses Association. She's concerned about dangerous health effects like birth defects, mental illnesses, and a higher chance of cancer in fracking areas.
Nurses are very concerned about the health impacts of fracking and really feel like it's just a human experiment that's being allowed to happen.
Alexandria Nagy, a representative from the Food and Water Watch, believes there's hope for change.
The last administration got off of coal, and so Mayor Garcetti can take the next step and set a target date for getting to 100% clean energy.
Some protesters are flying to Paris to hand deliver a petition to the UN against the use of natural gases at the Global Climate Conference. The mayor's office did not return our request for comment. Consumer activists are rallying outside Mayor Eric Garcetti and City Attorney Mike Feuer to fire the Department of Water and Power's ratepayer advocate. Consumer Watchdog says Fred Pickle is not truly advocating for DWP customers. They criticized his past work for utility companies. Pickle responded by saying he's worked with publicly owned utilities to reduce energy costs. Consumer Watchdog wants the city to resolve inaccurate DWP bills, where some customers were overpaid for services and others paid less than what was owed. Thousands of immigrants seeking asylum in the United States often find themselves detained and unable to post bail. In California, some of those denied their freedom have gone on a hunger strike. Thibault Claire's Gutierrez has the story.
Center in San Bruno.
Sorry about that. A federal appeals court today upheld California's death penalty. Today's decision overturned an Orange County judge's ruling that said the state's death penalty system is dysfunctional and so often delayed that a death sentence usually means life in prison. But the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals said delays ensure that defendants have ample time to have their cases heard. California's death row is the largest in the country. USC students responded today to a national call to action in solidarity with black students at the University of Missouri. Michael Radcliffe reports.
Hundreds of students clothed in black gathered around Tommy Trojan today. They were there to show support for the students of the University of Missouri and call attention to the climate of racism experienced there and at USC. They held signs that read that USC stands with Mizzou and black Trojans. The crowd stood in a circle. In the middle, students lined up to speak and to share their thoughts and hopes for the university.
Change the discourse of black lives and black Trojans here at the University of Southern California.
That was Tyron Young, a PhD candidate at USC. He hung a printout around his neck from the anonymous message app Yik Yak. The message contained a racist comment made on campus.
How blatant the racism is in the students' face and encounter daily, that sometimes the administration is either blind to or turns a blind eye to.
Students say this event should be a message for USC. Cynthia Blondell Timmerman told me that that message is that no student in any educational system should be subjected to a hostile racial climate. She and another group of students ended the event by leading the crowd in singing the Black National Anthem. For Annenberg Radio News, I'm Michael Radcliffe.
Thousands of immigrants seeking asylum in the United States often find themselves detained and unable to post bail. In California, some of those detained have their freedom gone and they go on a hunger strike. Thibault Claire's Gutierrez has the story.
Today,
detainees at the Adelanto Detention Center in San Bernardino County entered their ninth day of a hunger strike. They're part of a growing nationwide protest against putting asylum seekers into prison-like detention centers. 90 people started a hunger strike 8 days ago. 26 are still refusing to eat. Detained asylum seekers demand that Immigration and Customs Enforcement free them while their cases are pending. Victoria Mena is an advocate for the detained immigrants.
Just last night, the guards brought in pizza to the housing unit to try and tempt them into eating. These men are refugees. They're asylum seekers. They don't even know what pizza is. You know, they just want their freedom.
We contacted the Immigration Customs Enforcement about the strikers. The agency released a statement saying that they are under medical observation and will continue to be closely monitored. Thibaut Cléris Gauthier, Annenberg Radio News.
I'm Sebastian Vega, and it's 6 minutes past the hour.
Metro riders wanting a one-card ride throughout LA will have to wait. Metro plans to ask for a significant budget increase for its underground regional connector. Brenna Devaney has the reason for the changes.
Metro's $1.4 billion budget for a regional connector is no longer enough. Metro spokesperson Rick Jagger says LA's aging infrastructure has forced Metro to spend much more than it expected.
The extra money is needed because the project basically is being built in a highly populated area in downtown LA, and that's presenting a major challenge given the existing infrastructure down there.
The Metro is asking for $132 million more. The new regional connector will connect the Blue, Expo, and Gold lines. Commuters will have a one-seat, one-car ride and pay only one fare. Metro is pushing the opening date back to May 2021.
And our construction contractor has experienced numerous challenges with conducting utility relocation work due to either old deteriorating utilities or utilities that have been discovered during construction that were not charted.
Since starting the project, Metro has spent over half of its $90 million reserve intended for unexpected increases. Jagger said LA's size is to blame. With the underground work needed to connect the three lines, Jagger says the complications they are experiencing are common in construction. But when it's all said and done, the connector is expected to bring over 17,000 new daily riders to the Metro system.
It really is a regional project. Even though it's being built in downtown Los Angeles, it really is focused in terms of connecting the entire region and connecting it to by north, south, and east, west, by providing a one-seat ride for people so that they're not inconvenienced.
Metro's board will decide in December whether or not to approve the budget increase. Brenna Devaney, Annenberg Radio News.
Donald Trump is coming under fire for comments that he would deport 11 million undocumented immigrants. It's early in the campaign trail, and Trump already has low ratings among Latino voters. Marina Pena has reactions from Latinos to Trump's candidacy.
I think that everybody, as an American, they should be concerned. First, if you're an immigrant, if you're Mexican, you will feel offended.
That's Sofia Cuellar, a freshman at USC. I spoke to her just after Donald Trump hosted Saturday Night Live. SNL's Trump show experienced its highest overnight rating since 2012, but not everyone was pleased. After his recent comments against immigrants, some USC Latino students were offended that he was even given such a big platform in the first place. Cuellar refused to watch Trump on SNL and finds his comments on immigrants offensive.
You work to get here, you work to build a life here, and then this person is bringing these negative stereotypes to you, to your family, to your people.
Christian Guzman is a junior at USC, and he thinks Trump's ideas are downright scary.
And in a scenario where he does get elected and these ideas get passed, I can think of several family friends or family that could be affected by it severely.
Trump's comments on mass deportations have been challenged by Republicans and Democrats alike. Ana Luisa Padilla is the vice president of the American Immigration Lawyers Association. She says deporting immigrants is unrealistic and would cripple the economy.
what is happening is he is misrepresenting the reality of our system and the fact that we are a nation of immigrants and the fact that we need to have a system that considers how we are going to work the flux of individuals that do wish to come to this country, that are already in this country.
A recent poll conducted by Latino Decisions found that the majority of Latino voters in 14 battleground states have a very unfavorable image of Donald Trump. Marina Pena, Annenberg Radio News.
Has been a tough year for police in Los Angeles. The crime rate went up this year after more than 10 years of steady declines. Predictive policing is one of the tactics some law enforcement agencies are using to tackle crime. It's computer software that claims to predict incidents before they happen. Kevin Walker explains how predictive policing works.
This morning's data is residential burglaries, and you can see the map.
That's Sergeant Jerry Johnson. He's a 26-year veteran of the Alhambra Police Department. He's showing me PredPol, a computer program used to predict where and when crimes will happen.
All I have to do is save all my information. I hit return or enter, and it brings...
Alhambra, a small city near Los Angeles, began using the software about a year and a half ago. It was one of the first police agencies to do so in the country.
So the watch commander sergeant will log on to the PredPol software and tell the PredPol software, ask the PredPol to prepare a map. And what happens is it will print out what this is here.
Sergeant Johnson shows me a piece of paper with six small maps, each representing a section of Alhambra. Within the maps are even smaller boxes, each showing 500 by 500 foot areas where PredPol expects a crime to take place.
Then throughout the shift, as the day goes on, this map is distributed to the officers at the morning briefing and at the evening briefing. As the shift goes on, if the officers aren't busy with something, if they're not currently on an investigation or busy, they will go to these boxes.
Johnson says the predictions are based off of crime reports taken by Alhambra police officers.
And what they do is they take the date and time that the crimes occurred based on the crime report information, what the crime was, the method of entry, and so on and so forth, and what neighborhood those occurred on. And all that information gets put into PredPol.
PredPol's software is being used in 60 police departments nationwide, including the LAPD. Johnson says the software is useful, but he's wary of giving it too much credit for preventing crime. He says there are many reasons that a crime trend might go down.
Now, all of a sudden, the crime trend stops. Now, is that because it showed up on predictive policing and the officers were in the area? Or maybe these guys got caught violating parole. Maybe they provided a dirty urine sample and parole picked him up. There's nothing to say absolutely PredPol had anything to do with it.
In October, researchers from UCLA, UC Irvine, and the Georgia Institute of Technology released a study showing computers to be twice as effective at predicting crime than human analysts. The study focused on three LAPD divisions, two in the San Fernando Valley and one in South LA. The research team, which included two of PredPol's founders, also credited the computer algorithm with lowering the crime rate in those areas by about 7%. There is plenty of skepticism about whether PredPol works, but Hamid Khan of the Stop LAPD Spying Coalition sees it as a direct threat to civil rights.
The argument is that, well, a crime had happened, so we are using previous crime history. But by that, it's also, you know, while they can argue that, no, it's not guilt by association, but the impact and practice is guilt by association, so whole communities are being impacted. That's number one.
Khan and fellow activist Jamie Garcia say predictive policing contributes to police abuses.
So police are sent into these areas, and so they essentially are inundating the same communities that are experiencing these problems, and the feedback, what we call a feedback loop of injustice occurs to where communities that are already experiencing over-policing end up getting over-policed again.
PredPol CEO Larry Samuels disagrees.
In any neighborhood where you're going to say, well, you're over-policing this neighborhood, the response to that would be, look, no one's going to be allocating those kind of resources to a neighborhood without having some level of historical data that show that there's a much higher level of crime in the neighborhood.
PredPol's no stranger to controversy. In 2013, the San Francisco Weekly took aim at the company for its questionable marketing tactics. PredPol's contract with Alhambra stipulated that in addition to a $20,000 a year fee, the department had to promote the product to other law enforcement agencies. Samuels says he stopped the practice when he came to the company last year.
The primary reason I got rid of it is I just found it really objectionable. I don't think it does anybody any good. I think it lends to a loss of credibility. And if somebody has something good to say, they're going to say it one way or another.
PredPol's long-term prospects are looking up. The Department of Justice and the Police Executive Research Forum surveyed 200 police agencies and found 70% plan to start or increase their use of predictive policing. Kevin Walker, Annenberg Radio News.
Smile, a stolen glance. That is the unspoken language of romance. But what happens if you don't speak the language? Cole Marie Rivera gives us a glimpse into that world.
Anita Lesko is 54 years old. She's short, with a round face. Abraham Nielsen is tall, with dark hair, combed straight back. He's 28. But age was never the problem. Anita has never faced a wall she couldn't climb. She's a nurse anesthetist, and she's published her own autobiography. After she saw Top Gun, she became an aviation photojournalist. About a year ago, Abraham's mother invited Anita over to dinner.
I had never gotten invited to anyone's house for dinner, so I thought this was kind of interesting.
Abraham was still living with his mother then. He's a draftsman, and for fun, plays chess. Two games at a time, with computers. Anita thought Abraham was disabled. He didn't talk, and he nodded sometimes when no one was speaking. Two people couldn't be more different. Though they did have something in common. They're both autistic, intelligent, and high-functioning. They identify as having Asperger's. People with Asperger's sometimes have higher-than-average intelligence. When you see them on TV, they're the brainy ones, the Sheldons from Big Bang Theory, the computer geeks, the ones who can't carry on a conversation. Abraham's mother invited Anita over for dinner after meeting her at an Asperger support group.
I was kind of interested in seeing him again, so I accepted the dinner invitation. Now, I would come there, and Abraham would sit over here, and she would sit there, and she would do all the talking, but she would keep referring to him as my handicapped, disabled son. So then at the end of dinner, then she would say to him, Abraham, go make coffee.
Anita and Abraham evaded his mother's watchful eye, stealing glances at each other over the table for a year.
So, but I used to look at him, and we would look into each other's eyes, and I'd be thinking, I wonder what he's thinking. I wonder, does he think I'm kind of cute? So what were you thinking? Tell her.
Yes, actually, she is actually quite very cuteful, I suppose, look at it.
What happens next is not as easy as boy meets girl, boy gets girl. Love with autism is complicated. Eye contact can be tricky. Sensory experiences are heightened, so some may be hypersensitive to touch, while others may prefer not to be touched at all. They began texting each other. When Abraham finished his first year of draftsman school, it was the perfect pretext for a dinner out.
This dinner, and I had actually gift cards to this Italian restaurant in our town. I thought it was a good reason to use up the gift cards and everything.
Once alone, they found they could talk easily. He was intelligent. He showed emotion. Could this be the same man who made coffee in silence for a year? Things all changed when someone gave Anita a giant rabbit to add to her farm menagerie. Anita asked Abraham to assemble a prefab bunny hutch. As anyone who's ever tried to assemble an IKEA bookshelf can tell you, relationships are made and broken in the service of furniture construction. One night, Abraham helped Anita unload the completed hutch.
And Abraham stepped forward to put his arms around me to give me a hug. And we were like just plastered together, and his mother's still standing there talking 100 miles an hour with a Spanish accent. And I'm not hearing a word she's saying, because I'm holding on to him, and I glanced up at the full moon and just did not want to let go.
It was a very magical experience that I ever went through. I felt like a one. We couldn't tell where to begin or where to end. We felt like one.
On September 26, 2015, Anita and Abraham got married. It was the first all-autistic wedding as a part of the Love and Autism Conference in San Diego, California. Everyone in the wedding, the best man, the cake baker, the pianist, all had autism. As Anita and Abraham exchanged vows, they looked directly into each other's eyes. For Detours, I'm Cole Marie Rivera.
If you've ever wondered about the origins of curious words and phrases, Here's Emma Delaporte with today's Root Source. While most Californians are familiar with the warm and rainy winters that occur every 5 years or so, few would be able to explain why we call this phenomenon El Niño, meaning the boy in Spanish. During an El Niño year, changes in wind patterns cause warm waters near the equator to flow into the Pacific. The warming of the Pacific Ocean has a whole range of climate effects, including drier, colder winters in the Northwest and wetter, warmer winters in California. So what does any of this have to do with a little boy? The term originated among fishermen in Peru. They noticed that the unusual weather that disrupted fish and bird populations always happened around Christmas time. So they called this phenomenon El Niño, a reference to baby Jesus. In Los Angeles, cars rule and the roads are always a little crazy. In operas, the characters are over the top and the arias are gorgeous. So what happens when the two meet? A mobile opera by Yuval Sharon's opera company, The Industry, has hit the streets of LA. Hopscotch's stage is made of a fleet of cars and limousines that crisscross the city with the cast and audience members buckled into cars together. On the opera's opening day, Corinne DeWitt spoke with Mark Lowenstein, the spectacle's musical director, about how Hopscotch works.
Hey! Your taillight is out!
Excuse me?
Your taillight is out!
This isn't another driving moment in Los Angeles caught on tape. This is a scene from an opera called Hopscotch. Hopscotch is an immersive opera that takes place mostly on the road. As an audience member, you ride along with the singers and musicians. The performance plays out in a series of chapters, inside the cars and stopping at iconic locations across the city.
Yeah, well, maybe you should stay off the road.
Yeah, get on with you.
For this chapter, I'm in the back seat of a limo with three other audience members. There's a character, an executive type. He's having a conversation with the guy on the motorcycle in the lane next to us. The bike guy is mic'd, and his voice is streaming through the car speakers.
You are an awfully gloomy conversation partner.
Nothing connects with nothing.
Hopscotch is divided into three routes. One ticket gets you one passenger seat on either the red route, the yellow, or the green. Each route tells a different version of the same master story. Mark Lowenstein is the musical director of Hopscotch. He says that the routes reflect the cultural environment of LA.
It's more determined by where they are. The red route goes sort of through southern LA, Boyle Heights-ish, and has a lot of Mexican heritage to it, and there is a quinceañera scene, and it goes by Libro Schmibros, it goes on Mariachi Plaza. And the yellow route is all geographically centered around downtown. It's more introspective. There's a dream scene, there's a psychological experiment scene, and then there's all sorts of memory scenes within this downtown setting.
This is chapter 25 on the yellow route. We're following the character as she sort of dreamily walks through the Bradbury building.
The green route is a little wilder because it takes place out in nature and it's up in Elysian Park and down by the LA River, so the scenes tend to be a little crazier.
To give you an idea, the motorcycle chapter is on the green route as we headed from Riverside Drive up into Elysian Park.
So we're standing here in the Central Hub, and it's a purpose-built structure designed by someone from SciArc.
That's the Southern California Institute of Architecture in downtown LA.
We're here, there are 24 screens that are live streaming the scenes as they happen around LA, and you can stand, program your headphones to listen to any one of them, or just look and watch.
Anyone, ticket or not, can come to the Hub during the shows to watch all chapters live streamed as they're happening simultaneously around the city.
I don't think we could do this production anywhere else. For one thing, the mobility, the LA is definitely about cars, and it's about searching for a center and finding it in yourself. To a certain extent, it's a very different experience in the arts here than in other cities right now. This is LA's time. It's a big renaissance, and a lot of people are on board, and it's exciting.
The Hub will be free for the public. The industry hopes the option of seeing the opera free of charge will appeal to new audiences. Corinne DeWitt, Annenberg Radio News.
Women singers are well represented in the music industry. But behind the scenes, the industry is still dominated by men. When women receive producing credit, it is usually for their own songs, but some women producers are working for their voices to be heard. LaMarco McClendon sat down with Katrina Bryant, an up-and-coming music producer from Palmdale, California.
They're two different girls. They sound one and the same.
When people think of music producers, they often think of men like Timberland, Jermaine Dupri, and Kanye West. Women producers are often left out. In fact, not one woman has won a Grammy for Producer of the Year in the 41 years the award has been in existence. But Katrina Bryant, an African-American producer from Palmdale, is hoping to change that.
I've been involved in music ever since I was 2 years old because I started singing at first because my mom was singing and I wanted to copy my mom. I would actually sing with her karaoke machine. They used to have to hide the mic every time I came in because I would come in and I would just totally take over.
Over the years, Bryant found she preferred creating instrumentals and songs over singing and taught herself to play a variety of instruments, which has contributed to her wide range of musical styles.
I play the flute, the piccolo, the guitar, piano, drums, bass, and percussion. I've created rock songs, hip-hop, R&B, jazz, neo-soul. One I haven't done, which I'm actually kind of looking forward to, is country. I really want to try and do country.
Pursuing a music career has not been easy for the young producer. Her social life has suffered as she chose her career over friendships.
I had other people in my ear telling me, you know, you need to go to school for this so you can, you know, have something to fall back on. But what people don't really realize is if you go to school, you know, to have something to fall back on, you're basically preparing to fail.
She didn't give up. She instead focused her attention on what she felt was most important, her music.
I've always wanted to touch people with my music. Reason being is because other people's music has touched me. Like, prime example, artist Janelle Monáe. Her music is liberating. It makes you feel powerful. It makes you feel like you're worth something. I want my music to do the same for other people.
Bryant recently became a member of the La Music Company, where she will begin having her music distributed amongst filmmakers and television networks. She hopes to be the first woman to win Producer of the Year in the next 6 years.
I looked it up. There's never been a female ever to take that home. And I want to do that. And it's not even for me, but it's just to make a name for females, you know, in the industry, to show that we can hold our own.
Bryant said the one thing she wants to stress to the world is that women are capable of doing tremendous things. LaMarco McClendon, Annenberg Radio News.
Daniel Radcliffe received his star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame today. Radcliffe was launched into superstardom with a starring role in the Harry Potter series. The Boy Who Lived kicked off his acting career when he was 10 years old, with a title role in the David Copperfield series on PBS. Since Harry Potter left theaters, Radcliffe has dabbled in Broadway and other critically acclaimed roles. His latest film, Victor Frankenstein, opens in 2 weeks. That's it for From Where We Are. We had help today from Samira Jordan, Caitlin Plummer, and Tufan Najafi. Our board operator is Lexi McAvinci. Martha Daniel is our producer. And for all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Carla Javier.